Whether it's an eclectic music blend or meaningful discussion, it's here 24 hours a day, commercial-free. 88.9 KRFC and KRFCFM.org.
From KRFC 88.9 FM, Radio Fort Collins, this is Side A of the Flipside. I'm your host, Michael Spierneck, and this week on the Flipside, I'll be talking with the executive director of KRFC, Jen Parker. Growing up in a musical family on a dairy farm in southern England, Jen learned to play the piano, the violin, clarinet, and guitar. After leaving school at 16, she traveled to Venezuela, turned 17 in Texas of all places, and at 18, found herself working at the famous Blue Note Jazz Club in New York City.
They gave me the job of serving the band. So I would take drinks upstairs to their little room and knock and just hand the tray of booze through the door, terrified.
So stick around and get to hear the rest of that story and oh so much more from KRFC's Jen Parker. Jen Parker, welcome to the Flipside.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Well, it's great for you to be here. You are obviously no stranger to KRFC. You have a job here, don't you?
I do.
And with a fancy title, from what I understand.
It's very fancy.
Yeah. Executive Director.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about what it is you do here?
Thank you. Well, it's an honor to be on your great show. Can I just say I love this show? I love listening to it.
Well, thank you.
Just a great fan. I think you do a fantastic job. So on a day-to-day basis, really, I get the pleasure of working with a small team of staff here at the radio station, 88.9 FM, Radio Fort Collins.
You got that right. Very
yes,
good.
Yes, yes, yes. KRFC, of course. And there's lots of areas of focus. There's programming, there's marketing, there's production, there's underwriting, there's community partnerships, there's volunteer management. So we have several staff, a few staff that oversee certain aspects of those elements.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of folks just kind of turn on the radio wherever they are and hear what's going on, whatever station it happens to be.
Yep.
Hopefully it's our station, KRFC. And they think that's, you know, it's you just press a button and it all happens. But that's not really true.
Yeah, here we have actually 140 or so volunteers from our great community. Amazing. I mean, we've got doctors, lawyers, retirees, high schoolers, college students, professors, city workers. I mean, everything across the board. And it is it's a bubble. It's a wonderful bubble where people can come and feel very creative, very safe being themselves. We are an open door policy for the community and really try and encourage philanthropy and giving back, and it's pretty special.
Well, and it is truly a community radio station. There are, well, maybe talk a little bit about what a community radio station is versus a commercial, typical commercial radio station.
Yeah, so there's several categories within community radio stations across the country. There's several thousands of those across the country. But the majority are affiliated with NPR, National Public Radio, so they get funding from the government.
Right.
They're also, many of them are affiliated with a university system, so they'll get funding through the university and be even housed in the university itself. So KRFC, 88.9 FM, Radio Fort Collins, we are completely independent. We're a nonprofit. And our financing, if you like, budgeting comes from donations, generous donations from listeners, memberships, sustaining memberships from listeners, underwriting from community partners, and then grants from very generous organizations or foundations.
Mm-hmm.
And typically those you apply for and go through a very rigorous process to be able to qualify for those.
And a lot of what goes on here with the focus of the station is really bringing the community back
mm-hmm.
to the public through the station.
We're very eclectic. I'd like to say that we're very, very proud of that. We have a huge selection of various genres. We have about 60 live shows a week.
And that's incredible. There's 60 live shows a week.
And every one of our programmers, like yourself, is a volunteer. Mm-hmm. So those are people like yourself that choose to do this because it's your passion and you love music or you love the radio or current affairs or local community affairs.
Yeah. Would you encourage folks to come and connect with KRFC, I would imagine, who are in the community and make that, you know, you have a lot of volunteers here.
Yes.
But there's room for more, I would imagine.
Absolutely, there is. And we are very, very unique in the sense that we are housed in the heart of the Music District. And the Music District is a wonderful music incubator that services, supports, and helps train and guide musicians from all over the world. And our radio station is actually within the Music District. So what makes this community, too, really unique that helps us as a community radio station is that we were talking the other day, a group of us, and you look at Austin and you look at Nashville.
Right.
You know,
names
on the map,
names
we all know, music hubs for live music. And Fort Collins is absolutely, I would nearly vote that it's number three now.
Yeah, Fort Collins is right up there with those names. And I think we had a band come through here. And then for those of you out there who don't know, we have a show called Live at Lunch where local and touring musicians come through and they play live at the radio station. Yeah. And one of them, they were from Austin.
Yeah.
And we're just going on about what a great supportive community we have here for music. So
it's
great to know.
It's really special.
So your job really is to herd all these cats. I mean, you have hundreds of volunteers.
We do. And I just, you know, to me, when you say herd cats, it's sort of people, you know, people running in different directions. Mm-hmm. I would say that is not the case here. People want to be here and they're so committed and so passionate that it blows me away every day. How many people come in and out of this wonderful, gorgeous, state-of-the-art radio station. And they're so reliable and they're so dedicated and they make my job so easy, mm-hmm. really. It's really special.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. So a lot of times when I have guests in here, I ask if they're natives. I kind of have an idea that just judging from a bit of an accent that I think your listeners may detect, that you're probably not originally from Fort Collins.
No, and I'm not from Texas either, believe it or not. I am a true Brit and very proud of it.
And
dual citizen, though, I will say.
You have dual citizenship.
Yes, I am an American.
Do you have two passports,
too?
You do.
The British are very lucky that. We can actually become Americans and not have to forfeit our British passport.
Well, that's great.
I'll probably get some legal officer knocking on my door in the
probably.
Morning.
Oi. So now, okay, you're from England.
Yes.
And whereabouts from England are you?
So I grew up on a farm in the south of England, Devonshire, near a small Elizabethan town called Totnes.
Totnes.
T-O-T-N-E-S.
Yes, now I saw that on the map, and I was wondering how to pronounce that. Totnes. Okay.
Totnes. And it's actually been voted as one of the funkiest places to live on Earth.
Funky in a good way, I hope?
Funky in a great way.
And how so?
Very similar to Fort Collins.
Oh.
Arts, music. It's gorgeous. There's ley lines. There's a lot of, you know, very
mystical,
spiritual,
right.
Mystical. It's a real hippie hangout. It's awesome. And it's Elizabethan. So there's a little castle on the top of the hill, a moat and a river at the bottom, and this high street with original Elizabethan buildings.
Wow. And so you grew up right outside of this.
I did.
This was the hamlet.
A dairy farm in the wet, rainy Devon, south of England.
A little
winters.
Bit different. A little bit different than Fort Collins.
A little bit.
Yeah. So, so do you get to go back? Do you
yep.
miss it?
Yeah, I do. My whole family's in the UK. Everybody.
Oh, everybody.
So I emigrated with my former career about 24 years ago, and
so let's talk a little bit about how you wound up here. So you. You grew up on a dairy farm, apparently, in the countryside of southern England.
Yes.
And I understand that at the tender young age of, 16 or so, you decided that you needed to head in another direction, or to tell us about that?
So at 16 in England, you can actually leave school, leave high school.
Okay.
And you can either take a gap year, which is really common in Europe, and then come back to go back to college. Or you can take a gap year at 18 after you've finished the last 2 years of high school and then go on to university. So I took a gap year, was the intent.
When you were 16.
When I was 16, and I went to Venezuela for what was going to be a year. And
Wait a minute now. You went to Venezuela?
Yes.
Okay.
To Caracas,
and,
to live with a family that my family knew. And the father was a famous musician and owned a cartoon animation company. And a year later, I was supposed to return to England, had a place already in a polytechnic college to do photography, art, and drama, which my dream was to be a comedian. And,
well, we might give you a chance to do a little shtick here later if you'd like.
So anyway, the story is long. I'll try and keep it really brief. But I went to Venezuela, and 16 years old, I thought I was going to learn to really speak Spanish fluently because I was studying it in school, and was going to come back with all this experience in this cartoon animation company, live with this wonderful family we knew, and then go back to college.
Well, that sounds like exactly what I'd be thinking if I were 16.
So when I got there, I was desperately homesick. Everyone wanted to speak English with me to practice their English.
Right.
And the cartoon animation company, as wonderful as it was, I was basically tracing cartoons.
Well,
and it was fairly...
Not what you had imagined.
Not what I imagined. So after about 6 months, I went to Houston to see my grandfather.
Let's just back up just a little bit. So you were 16.
I was 16.
You wind up going to Venezuela to live with the family that was were friends with your family,
yes.
Right? And so all of a sudden, you're in a culture and a situation where you have no friends. You
mm-hmm.
didn't really know anybody. You didn't speak the language, although they wanted to speak English with you. How was that emotionally? And it wasn't kind of all... You know, it wasn't what you thought it was going to be. How did you deal with that?
It was hard, but I loved the family. I mean, they were like second family to me. Their kids were younger than me, so they were darlings and wonderful. And the parents, to this day, the mother has since passed, but they were Venezuelan parents for me. I mean, cool, incredible human beings that I will treasure my whole life. And
so you were there for about a year?
No. I ended up only being there about four to six months.
6 months, right, okay.
And my grandfather lived in Houston. He's a Brit, but emigrated years ago to Houston. So I thought, okay, I'll go and see him and finish out this gap year in Houston. Well, he said, go home, you're too young to be traveling. So
that's what grandfathers are for.
I know. And it's a crazy story, but basically I didn't want to go back. And I wasn't a rebel. I look back now and think, oh my gosh, I can't believe this all happened.
Yeah, you were this young and you're in Houston now.
Yeah, and I had my 17th birthday at my grandfather's house.
Oh, you did.
And then about 2 weeks later, I got on a Greyhound
by
myself and met a friend of my sister's. She had been on a kibbutz with in Israel.
Of course. Why?
And he was
surprised.
An American in his 20s and was delivering a car to California, and I went with him.
So you rode shotgun.
I rode shotgun
out to California.
He was very kind and very respectful, and I am amazed that I lived through it all. But we got to Phoenix, and he announced that the car now was being delivered, and we were going to hitchhike to LA.
What?
And I got in a Mexican's van and sat on a milk crate for about 6 hours.
Did your parents know what was going on at the time?
Not all the details, no.
You hitchhiked from Phoenix to California.
Yep, and then we traveled all up the West Coast, and then we flew to New York, and he said goodbye and went home to Philadelphia. And I got on a train and went to New London, Connecticut.
Okay.
And my parents knew another family, and I went to see them. And I worked in a restaurant called Poor Richard's as a dishwasher because I wasn't old enough to waitress.
Well, that was probably as much fun as tracing cartoons. I don't know. Yep. So let me ask you this. So it sounds like your family, your parents, had a lot of connections to the United States. Where did that come from?
So in our wonderful farmhouse, my parents ran a B&B as well. And we were on a sort of route from Plymouth, England, where ferries would come in from Europe. Uh-huh. And a lot of tourists in the south of England travel on this local B road, you call it, which is kind of the boondoggles. It's in the middle of nowhere roads, which are...
It's not like I-25.
No, thank goodness.
It's more like going up Rift Canyon or something.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And so we would get to meet people from all over the world growing up. And then,
And so that kind of paid off later on as you were being a vagabond in the United States at the age of 17.
Yep.
So you wound up in New London.
So I stayed there briefly, and then I crewed on a yacht from New London to Miami to get back to Miami to get to my return flight home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then there were a lot of yachts in that neighborhood up that way.
Yeah.
And did you know how to sail?
No, not really. And I found out through a friend in the restaurant that this couple were moving their boat to, I think it was, it wasn't, I can't remember where it was now,
somewhere
on the east coast of Florida, north of Miami. And so they were looking for crew, and I needed to get to Miami. So I crewed on the yacht, flew back to London, and went to college for about 2.5 months.
Oh, you did? 2.5 months.
Bored out of my mind. And then I ended up going back to the States for a year and worked in the Blue Note Jazz Club in New York.
A very famous jazz club in New York.
Yep.
And so now that we're at the Blue Note... let's talk a little bit about music. Tell us about your experiences at the Blue Note.
Well, it was amazing. I mean, for those of you who've ever been there, it's a tiny, intimate dive jazz bar that's just legendary. And when you're a waitress, you are incognito, dressed in dark clothes, of course, and you're trying to be invisible. Quietly, people actually eat dinner during the concerts. Mm-hmm. This one concert, it was George Benson and his band.
They say that I won't last too long on Broadway. I'll catch a Greyhound bus for home, they all say.
And they gave me the job of serving the band. So I would take drinks upstairs to their little room and knock and just hand the tray of booze through the door, terrified. But I had these tables right by the stage, and this couple was celebrating an anniversary and ordered a bottle of champagne. And the first thing I thought was, no. So I got this bottle of champagne, had never opened a champagne bottle before.
Oh, no.
But someone had told me, put a cloth over the
top.
Right,
so it doesn't explode.
So... George is doing his riff.
So he's
beautiful.
Up there on the stage.
He's up there doing full Monty, riff. And right at the perfect moment, the bottle went... And he looked over and went, yeah!
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Side A of the Flip Side here on KRFC 88.9 FM Radio Fort Collins. This week, we're talking with the executive director of KRFC, Jen Parker. Now, let's get back to my conversation with Jen. So now that we're chatting a little bit about music, when you were growing up, you grew up in a musical family.
Very. My mum's a pianist and still plays to this day, makes up her own music. She's really creative. She's an artist as well. My dad learned the piano later in life, which was really fun to watch a farmer's hands on the keys trying that are not nimble trying to learn, you know. But he did that and loved it and still plays a little today, and he's... in a choir, major choirs back in England. And then my brother's was a really great drummer and was in a band called the Whippets from Nowhere.
Which is a name I really love.
Whippets
from Nowhere.
I know. And then he had another identity called Slammer's Knob,
that sounds a bit naughty.
Let's move on quickly. But I grew up listening to David Bowie blaring out of his bedroom or the band rehearsing in the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a family band called the Free Pats.
Oh, were you part of the band?
I was.
And what did you, what was
I
your part?
I played the recorder or the, later on I played or attempted to, shall we say, the clarinet a little bit.
No. And what kind of music was the family band
it was
playing?
My
it wasn't
uncle
David
played
Bowie.
Oh, yeah, actually. No, my uncle played the banjo. My mum played the piano accordion. All the spoons.
Right, sure.
My brother played the double bass, which was a tea chest and a broom handle and a piece of string.
Well, and it worked, right?
And it was fantastic. And we've got recordings of it somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So, but you were exposed to a lot of musical instruments growing up.
Yes.
What did you learn to play?
I started with the piano, and then I learned the violin for a few years, the clarinet. And then I sort of found my passion for few years during my teens and a little beyond, which was the guitar. I still have an Ovation. It's got lots of dust on it, but I love it.
Well,
but
I should
I'm
have
out
had,
of practice.
I should have had you,
no, you
bring in
not.
Your guitar
no, you
here
not.
And play a little
no,
bit.
No, no, no.
So growing up on that dairy farm, what kind of music were you exposed to over the airwaves or through however? What
God,
did you grow up with?
Everything. I mean,
you
on
mentioned
Sundays,
David Bowie.
Yeah. I mean, it was all Supertramp and Peter Frampton, and it was the legendary, you know, Eric Clapton.
All the great
and,
Brit rockers.
Yeah. I mean, it was Queen. Oh, my gosh. You
so,
know.
You know, I have a question for you since you're British. It seems like there were so many great British bands, and there still are, but you mentioned, you know, Bowie and Supertramp and Stones, of course,
yeah.
And Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Where do you think that came from, that all that talent?
No, it's just, honestly, it culturally, it's really interesting. Music and learning other languages are two things I vividly remember at school. You know, it's part of your curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And learning music, to read music, you know. Growing up, everybody had piano lessons.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of the thing to do.
Right.
You know, we didn't have snowboarding or fly
no
fishing.
Skiing or fly
you know,
fish.
It was riding horses,
right.
dancing ballet, and playing an instrument and learning a language. I mean, that was just like the absolute, it wasn't even questioned. That was it.
But that's what you, and I understand you really took to ballet.
I loved it. I did.
Tell us about your ballet experience.
I danced ballet through most of my younger childhood. And then at about, I can't even remember how old I was, probably about 9 or 10.
Well, Jen, this wasn't that long ago.
Just the other day. But so much is on my mind. No, they told me that, you know, you've got a future in ballet, but you'd have to quit riding a horse.
So you were
horse.
Talented enough that folks were encouraging you to go into ballet?
Potentially, yeah.
Really?
So, but they said I had to give up riding my pony.
Now, why would that be?
Because when you ride a horse, it changes
your physical right.
muscular strength and... Mm-hmm. I said, no,
so,
I can't give up riding my pony.
So
I gave up ballet.
So, well, you got.
But I kept dancing.
And that kind of, your dancing kind of translated into a career a little bit. Didn't you start a company at one point that
I
was
did.
Involved in
when
that?
When I got back from the States, I launched a company because I'd taken aerobic lessons and it was all Jane Fonda era, you know. Leg warmers,
right.
Eat your heart
sure.
out and all that.
Yeah, Dirty Dancing and
yes.
that kind
and,
of thing.
And I learned to be an aerobics instructor.
Oh.
I convinced the bank manager to loan me £500. told him I'd be the Jane Fonda of the UK, and he fell for it.
Well, well,
poor chap. Anyway, I did pay him off.
Well, but, that's good. So you started a small business.
Yeah, and I called it GoFit because I just got back from America, and everybody was saying go for it. It was in the 80s,
you
know.
Oh, okay, right.
And so my aunt, who is a graphic designer, designed the Nike swoosh for me before the Nike swoosh existed. It was GoFit with a
you had the lightning bolt. Wow.
Well, it wasn't a tick.
It was close.
It was similar.
Yeah,
well, I think they copied me.
I think there might be a lawsuit here where we maybe do make some money.
I taught about 10 lessons a week for about a year.
And you were probably the fittest person in the neighborhood.
Totnes, I was living back in I was living back in Devon.
So do you still do you still exercise? Do you still dance?
And well, yeah, I dance if you put me on a dance floor.
Okay.
But
well,
I do exercise a lot. I love it. Joe and I love that, my hubby and I.
Well, I would imagine if you dance when you're on a dance floor, you like dance music.
I love dance music, so, but don't tell everybody that.
No. Now, why would you say there's nothing wrong with dance music?
No, there's not. I love electronic dance music.
Let's go back. We kind of left off a little bit where you had gone to, came back, flew back from Miami, came back to England and went to college.
Briefly.
For a couple of months and were bored out of your mind, which I can understand because you were, previous to that, you were running all over the United States enjoying yourself. So what happened after the boredom set in college?
Well, I've always had a brilliant work ethic. I call it a brilliant work ethic, and I give my dad total credit for that. You know, I always used to joke that when you work on a farm, you have to milk the cows, otherwise their udders will explode.
There's no choice.
You have to work.
Can't have a day off, right?
You can't. And so I love working. I don't see work as work. And when you find your passion, you know, it just doesn't feel like work. But oh my gosh, after that, I did the aerobics thing for a while, and then I nannied in Greece for a year.
Oh, so you flew to Greece?
A friend of mine said, I'm going to become a nanny in Greece for a year, but I don't want to go on my own. Do you want to come? So I said, oh, all right then.
As you are wont to do,
as
apparently.
But there's a long story, but the brief version is we both ended up going to Greece together, and whole backstory behind that. But I ended up nannying a 14-year-old daughter to the private secretary's family of Mitsotakis, who was the prime minister at the time. And that was a complete, I mean, it wasn't planned. This agency, my friend was applying for these nanny jobs too. She ended up getting two jobs and could only take one of them.
And you took the one with the
prime
minister.
And I took the other one, and she didn't realize which one she'd taken and which one I was taking, and we got to Greece. And
tell us about that job.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I would wake up.
Way?
Well, I was told I just had to be her sister for the summer.
Okay.
And so we'd hang out on the beach, go shopping, and then they took major siestas, so I'd go and work on my tan.
The toughest job you ever
had.
So after that, what transpired then? Well, how did you finally wind up over here?
Yeah, a major event happened in my life, really. I was living now in Bath in England, and I was working in a department store as a assistant manager in the fashion department. It was a job I found, and I was in my early 20s, and all my friends had gone to college and were qualifying to be this, that, and the other, and I sort of felt like, what will I do when I grow up? I've sort of had this incredible traveling experience, but, you know, wasn't feeling particularly great about myself. Mm-hmm. And just did not know what direction I was going to go in. And there was an ad in the paper, and it said, bubbly person with no experience.
Well, that sounds like you.
And, so anyway, I applied for the job. I got an interview, and Chris Anderson interviewed me.
Really?
Well, Chris Anderson now owns TED Talks.
Right.
And he's a genius. Now, as he was then, he had launched a magazine publishing company called Future Publishing. Mm-hmm. He'd been fired from a previous job, set up his own publishing company, and was hiring a new ad sales rep. So I got the job, and they put me on a diesel car magazine to sell advertising.
Okay.
And the first cold call I made from the Yellow Pages was a Welshman. And I was supposed to sell ads to gas stations.
Okay.
We call them garages.
Garages, of course.
And to sell them a 32 English quid little classified
little ad. Right,
to
sure.
advertise their garage. Uh-huh. And
sounds simple enough.
So you cold call these people, and you tell them who you are and what you're calling about and where you're from
right.
and the magazine. And this first ever call, he said, "Lovey, I'm so sorry, but I've only got about one pump by the sheep in the backyard, you know." So anyway, that was my first cold call, and I thought I was going to be terrible and
so
not
it didn't
have any
go, it
fun.
Didn't go well.
Didn't
he
go
really
well.
Didn't
the first
need
call
an,
didn't go well.
He didn't need an advertisement for his one pump out by the sheep.
But then I began to call people that did have a few pumps mm-hmm. at their gas stations. And after about 6 weeks, I got transferred onto a video game magazine, and that was the beginning of a long career in the video game industry.
And I know that, so answering an ad that says bubbly with no experience was probably the best thing you ever
did. Yes, that was like a little God wink right there.
And I know you've had some experience, a career in video game industry. Was Mark Hamill associated with that, or was that another time in your career?
Yes.
Now, for those of you who've been living under a rock, you might want to explain who Mark Hamill is.
So Mark Hamill is Luke Skywalker, and he had obviously become God overnight when he starred in the original Star Wars trilogy. And after the third movie, he fell out with LucasArts, and there was no contract.
He did. He fell
for any posters, tchotchkes,
merchandise,
his name, merch, nothing. So he got paid for the movies, fell out with LucasArts and then George Lucas himself, and they didn't hire him again.
Really? So
and
he had
so,
no. He didn't have any financial interest in any of the Star Wars stuff.
And he was only 19 when he first.
Oh, wow.
And he really didn't have a manager or anything. So now he's in his early 20s, married to his dental hygienist, and had this horrendous falling out. And so for many years was out of work and very bitter.
Really?
And so wonderful and so talented. And then he actually went into radio work the majority of his career, and he was the Joker in the radio version of Batman for years. That's how he made his money, and then he started. Anyway, so long story short, I'm working for Chris Anderson in Future.
Okay.
And I was there for 5 years and ended up launching Amiga Format magazine, and we had great success and sold lots of ads, and the magazine did really well, and it ended up becoming the largest video game magazine in the world. And then at about 5 years that I'd been with them, I was offered a job with one of my clients that was a video game company.
So they were stealing you away.
They were. Yeah. So I jumped to the other side of the fence and became the brand manager for Europe for an Austin-based video game company called Origin Systems.
Okay, so they were based out of Austin, Texas.
Based out of Austin, and I was their only employee in Europe running France, Germany, England, and Spain's marketing and promotions.
There's a little bit of stress there, no?
It was amazing.
Fun. Maybe you call it fun.
It was amazing. It was amazing, and the guys were amazing, the people, the team. So I, during my time with them in Europe, Electronic Arts, the giant, bought our company. So I moved to Electronic Arts offices in London. And then after 2 years there, got transferred to head up worldwide marketing for this division of Electronic Arts Origin Systems
so
in
you,
Austin.
So you went from bubbly with no experience to heading worldwide marketing. Okay.
Yeah.
And now Mark
they
Hamill's,
were mad. They were mad. They didn't know what they were doing, you know.
And now Luke Skywalker
right,
figures
so
in here somewhere.
Some of our genius programmers actually launched a game. And Wing Commander, and it was the first ever video game that had mid-game sequences.
Which is what?
Mid-game sequences, you sort of play the shoot 'em up graphics,
right.
And then it would pause. This is dating back now, 22 plus years ago.
Okay.
And when it paused, you would press a button with your computer keyboard or your joystick, and it would take you to a cartoon-like real video actual people talking, and they were in your game.
Okay.
So they were the true characters. So the game was a space flight sim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Chris Roberts was the producer, highly successful living in LA. He's a Brit too, but was one of our producers then and produced this game, Wing Commander. And he hired, Chris hired former Luke Skywalker to be a character in our video game.
Really? So Luke Skywalker wound up being a character in the video game.
Yeah, so I actually ended up managing the press and PR with our team and flew him all over Europe and the States to do press junkets at trade shows.
You got to hang out with Luke Skywalker and travel all. What was that like? What is he like?
He's fascinating, and people are obsessed with him, so you'd be mobbed walking down.
Wherever you went.
Wherever, absolutely. I became like a bodyguard, actually, for him and his wife.
Well, I know you've not only crossed paths with movie star types like Mark, but you've also had some experiences with in the musical world. You have some stories about one or two folks that I think listeners will recognize. Peter Gabriel?
So Peter Gabriel has a recording studio just outside of Bath. And when I was living there, I was still teaching aerobics. And I met this fellow American gal who was also teaching aerobics. And she said, what are you doing on Tuesday at 5? And I wasn't doing anything. So she said, I want you to come with me and start a new class I'm doing with me. I've got permission to take you. And she was Peter Gabriel's private aerobics teacher at his recording studios. So every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, we'd go and teach Peter Gabriel and his band, aerobics, and his girlfriend, who at the time was, oh my gosh.
Was this when he was in Genesis or after he had left
after
and
Genesis.
Done his own thing?
Yeah. So we'd do aerobics.
Now you have to tell me,
yes.
To what songs were you doing aerobics?
Not Genesis or Peter Gabriel.
Well, that's probably
Cher, actually.
Oh, really?
Whatever.
Whatever had a good beat back then.
Yeah.
Now, I know, just kind of back to music again, I know you were a Supertramp fan. And there's one particular song that has maybe some nostalgic meaning for you.
Yeah, I just remember Goodbye Stranger. And you know how music can just evoke memory or emotion. You know, for me, I love music, and I think that music takes you on a journey in your mind, you know, no matter what the genre, it really can. And that was a really, when I emigrated to the States, I remember my siblings took me to the airport and watching them wave goodbye as I went through customs was pretty powerful to think I was heading to America.
And not planning on
coming back. No.
Goodbye, stranger. It's been nice. Hope you find your way. Glad to see you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Side A of The Flip Side here on KRFC 88.9 FM Radio Fort Collins. This week, we're talking with the executive director of KRFC, Jen Parker. Now, let's get back to my conversation with Jen. So at some point or another, you were 30, you came here, and somewhere you met, along the way, you met your husband.
Yes.
And
we met at the mailbox.
You met, now, let's just back up a little bit. Your husband is the athletic director for CSU, Joe Parker.
Colorado State.
Yeah, and of course, that's how you wound up here in Fort Collins.
Yep.
But so you met at a mailbox.
We did. We were neighbors in an apartment complex in Austin. Joe was working for the University of Texas.
And you had the Austin connection because of the job that you had.
Right. With my job.
Right.
So I was working for Electronic
here.
Arts. Yep.
Tell us about meeting at the mailbox. You meet lots of people at the mailbox, right?
Yeah. Well, I was leaving and he was coming into the mailbox and we got eye contact. We didn't speak, but we saw each other. And the next day I flew to England on business for a week, but he now knew what car I drove. His version of the story is that he went to work that morning and said, I've just seen the woman I'm going to marry.
Oh, really?
And then that weekend I got back, we were introduced at the pool, in the pool,
at the
volleyball team during a volleyball game, and he completely ignored me. So I sat down thinking, oh, my dear, the man at the mailbox doesn't like me. And I'm ugly and I want to go and eat worms. And then the next thing I know, there he is. And he said, do you mind if I relocate? And he was talking about relocating his sunbed to next to me. But I thought he was talking about relocating countries. But anyway.
And were you totally confused when he said
which, I was.
I mean, I was
the man
just,
that ignored me.
Well, you just said this, and I was totally confused. So this was his opening line.
Yes, it was, and it worked.
So he, once you figured out that he wanted to relocate his sunbed by you, that was okay with you.
It was marvelous. But we talked for hours and realized we grew up on different sides of the pond, but were raised the same and...
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yep,
and
yep.
How much longer after that did you get married?
So we met in the May, and then the following summer, we went to England to give him a tour of my roots.
Meet family.
And
so you were that serious quick?
Yeah, and he proposed to me on the cliffs of Devon, overlooking the beach I used to play on as a child that I've told him was my favorite place on earth.
Is there one special song that you and your husband have that means something to you?
Well, from our wedding, it was Willie Nelson's cover of Louis Armstrong's It's a Wonderful World.
What a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, the dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
So Jen, I know you're a big music fan, obviously.
Yes.
And it's influenced your life a lot. Yeah, I know you've been to a lot of great shows, great concerts. You want to talk about some of those?
Yes. Some early epic ones were things, oh my gosh, I saw Michael Jackson in Wembley Stadium. That was amazing. So, you know, he's doing the moonwalk, everybody's
right.
Going nuts. There's an explosion, and suddenly there's this flash, and he's not on the stage anymore. He's up in the scaffolding.
What?
Like 60 feet away, dancing now up there, and there was absolutely no way that it could be the same person.
Right.
It was epic. Yep.
Yeah.
I saw Madonna at Wembley as well.
And Wembley
brilliant.
Is a big
football.
Describe. It's a big football right.
soccer stadium.
Okay.
It's the really premier music venue right. in England. I saw Whitney Houston in Wembley Arena, and that was the weirdest concert
How
I've
so?
Ever been to.
Why is that?
Well, she's incredible, but after every track, she would disappear and change.
Oh,
and then
really?
Come back in a different outfit.
Every single...
And then she'd play something super boppy. You'd be standing in your seats because you're in an arena, so it's more restricted. It's
right.
not like being in a club atmosphere
uh-huh.
where you can really let your hair down.
Right.
And she would play a really boppy number, and the whole crowd would start going crazy, dancing in their seat, you know, wonderful. Then the music would stop. She'd leave the stage.
What?
There'd be an uncomfortable, like,
right, what
5-7 minute break. And then she'd come back and sing something, like, super depressing. So it was the most discombobulated concert I've ever been to.
Do you think that was, drug issues? I
must
know she
have
had.
Been.
That
must
she
have
just.
Been.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really odd.
Yeah, it was really, really strange.
Okay.
I saw Eric Clapton. In the Royal Albert Hall.
Now, everybody knows in America is aware of the Royal Albert Hall because of the lyrics in the Beatles,
right?
And so what is that like? What kind of venue
is that? It's the most incredible acoustic venue. It's gothic, nearly. I can barely think of another word that fits it better.
I mean, it's been around for
ancient, right. rotunda-type, giant music venue that is ancient.
It's like hundreds
classical.
Of years old, right?
Hundreds,
yeah,
hundreds.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, and it's you know, royal boxes and velvet chairs,
right.
and it's ancient.
And there's Eric Clapton playing, yeah.
Eric Clapton played, and it was yeah. just amazing. That was amazing. What else have I seen? Eagles.
Saw them here in America?
Saw them in America in Oklahoma City.
Oh, well.
Saw the Stones in Oklahoma City.
In Oklahoma City, because you were living in Oklahoma
yeah.
City at one
saw
point.
Saw Cher. That was one of the most
you
fun concerts
Cher.
Ever. Yeah.
What was that show like?
Crazy. Crazy.
She used to do all kinds of costumes. And
she still does the costumes,
right.
but she doesn't actually move anymore, nor does her face. But I shouldn't
well,
say that on
no,
it. But
okay.
she's fantastic.
You're a Pat Metheny fan.
Well, Pat, I do love my Pat Metheny. Saw him in San Francisco.
Now, you say that like you're a big fan.
I am. I used to drive my Suzuki 250 through the Devon lanes with my tape deck blaring Pat Metheny on my headphones,
so,
which is probably really dangerous.
Your Suzuki is a motorcycle. You,
yes,
you rode a motorcycle.
I did.
You did. Why am I not surprised?
Joe and I have seen Diana Krall at Red Rocks. That was wonderful. We saw Seal there. Just saw English Beat the other day.
Oh, you did?
At
down at Washington.
Ah, Washington's
yeah.
is amazing.
Yeah, it's a great venue.
The Bohemian
venue.
Have done a brilliant job
yeah.
with that venue. It's so incredible that Fort Collins has these incredible music venues now.
I
was going to talk about something really interesting. In the old days, musicians used to make money from selling records. Well,
sure.
now they make money from performing. And so that's why you see an explosion in music live at places like cafes, breweries, parks.
Yeah, and here all over town.
City centers.
Fort Collins has
yep.
a bunch of musicians
yep.
coming through.
Yeah.
And I would imagine then they have to tour like that, and then they get paid through Spotify when
yeah.
people are kind of leasing their music,
yeah.
right? Is that
so
how it works now?
So they're still getting checks,
yeah.
and it may be even in more mass numbers because more people can
right.
listen now. But those royalties are much smaller because it's electronically
right.
shared
sure.
rather than a whole album being purchased for $12 or $15.
You know, you mentioned Washington's, and that's something that came out of the Bohemian Foundation. Is that
absolutely?
And you might want to talk a little bit about the relationship KRFC has with the Bohemian Foundation.
Yeah, we are very, very privileged that they have supported the station since its inception with grants and gift in kind to really just be a great community partner and invest in the arts. And so we have been very, very blessed. We actually have it's been incredible. They're amazing.
You saw Bruce Hornsby.
Yes.
Up at the Mish.
My first ever trip to the Mish.
Oh, really?
This summer.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What an I've never seen so many people stoned in one place at one time. I love it. It's just... The venue is just, it's epic.
There's nothing really like it in northern Colorado anyway.
No, I love the size of the venue too. And Mish are great partners of ours as well. They've been tremendous. They have incredible music acts.
Now,
did
Charlie ride you up on the bus?
He did. I said, if I'm going to ride on a bus through the canyons of Colorado or Uber with some stranger, I'd rather be on Charlie's bus. And Charlie's done this a long time. For those of you who don't know, Charlie Snyder, if you're listening in, he is one of our greatest programmers on this station.
Cosmic Charlie.
Cosmic Charlie on Friday afternoons. He's a gem.
And you're in safe hands when he rides you up to the Mish.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah. So talk a little bit, you know, the Mish is a great, unique venue. You've been here in Fort Collins for how long now?
It'll be 4 years in April.
4 years. Yeah. And what are some of the great things or not so great things about Fort Collins that you've discovered since you've been in Colorado?
I mean, honestly, it's breathtaking. Every single day, you know, you look at the mountains and the foothills and you pinch yourself.